downfield. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a hit from Punt. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. John Schmelk joined by Lance Meadow. Lance, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about everything with you?
I'm doing great. The Giants draft is in the books. We know who the players are. Now let's learn a little bit more about them. Let's welcome in Tony Pauline, draftinsider.net. Tony, it's good to hear from you. I guess you can start to wind down a little bit after the draft is finally over. Now you got all these undrafted free agents to track, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's a little bit of relaxation, and believe it or not, at the end of next week, we start to get ready for the 2016 draft. It's a never-ending process, but, you can't let time slip by.
Well, the world goes round and round and round.
It does.
Let's start up top with the Giants' first-round pick. Brandon Scherff off the board at 5 to Washington, I think a little earlier than everyone expected. So the Giants went to their next best player and offensive lineman on the board. That's Ereck Flowers, tackle out of Miami. We've all heard some of the knocks in that maybe the technique needs a little bit of work, but I think everyone can agree, Tony, that the ceiling and the upside with his arm length, his feet, his height, his weight is off the charts.
And his athleticism and his power and his explosion. So absolutely. I mean, you know, the good things are a lot of what you just mentioned. When you watch Flowers, when he gets his hands on an opponent, he can dominate. You know, I've seen comparisons made to Anthony Davis, the former Rutgers tackle. I think that's a lot of garbage. Flowers plays with a much nastier attitude. He's much more dominant at the point of attack. He drives defenders off the line, run blocking. He's got the footwork and the quickness and the agility to play in pass protection, but the technique definitely needs work. All too often, he falls off blocks. He does not have great balance. You find him on the field too many times. But the upside is there. I mean, the upside is incredible. And if you harness that upside, you get him to consistently play with proper techniques. And that's really what the NFL game is about. It's about the mental aspects of it as well as the techniques, because everyone is such a terrific, terrific athlete. Giants will have themselves a starting tackle for a long time to come. There's no guarantees with this guy. But really, he's the complete package where I think can play a right tackle and also eventually be used on the left side. You know, once he kind of hashes those things out, stops bending at the waist, stays upright, bends his knees, and you know, just does what a proper NFL tackle has to do.
Tony, more often than not, teams try to find the five best offensive linemen to put on the field, regardless of where they played in college. And you look at the Giants right now, you have Will Beatty, you have Justin Pugh at the respective tackle spots. You just mentioned Flowers had experience at right tackle and left tackle in college. He's 6'6", he's 329. From a hypothetical standpoint, can he move inside to guard? Is the interior something that he can flourish in, or is he pretty much just an outside offensive lineman?
I mean, he may be able to. I think he's better at tackle because he needs room to work. I think the better idea is to put him at right tackle and kick Justin Pugh inside the guard, because I think Pugh's better off at guard and Flowers is better off at tackle because he needs a bigger area to work. It's also, you know, better suits him. You know, like you said, you want to put the five best guys on the offensive line. You also want to put them, you know, in positions where they will be successful, where they can be at their best. And I think Pugh at guard and Flowers at tackles, it could be a lethal combination moving forward.
Tony, obviously all rookies have their growing pains. Nobody, especially rookie offensive linemen, are great off the bat. Those Zach Martin type of players are very, very rare. If Flowers is to have a couple rough patches early, is it going to be in pass protection? Is it going to be in the run game? Is it going to be mental errors? Is it going to be penalties? If he does have struggles early, where do you think they're going to come?
A combination of everything you said, but I think it would be more in pass protection because he's a waist bender at times. And what happens is if you're playing tackle and you bend at the waist, the guys at the next level are so talented, they'll just use swim moves and arm over moves to get around you and attack your quarterback. Like I said, when you watch him run blocking, when he squares up against defenders, he can drive them off the line of scrimmage. It's just the lack of balance, the bending at the waist, sort of the haphazard movement, which is his downfall, and which will hurt him most in pass protection, which could lead to penalties, grabbing on the guys. He didn't really do that a lot, or when I watched him, didn't seem to do that a lot in college. That leads to a lot of grabbing of guys, basically, to protect the edge. So I think, you know, he can be he has been and shown himself to be a dominant run blocker, just to polish in his game to improve his pass protection skills.
Talking with Tony Poline of DraftInsider.net. Tony, you mentioned about Eric Flowers. Then the Giants pretty much get a first-round value pick in round two by trading up to land Landon Collins, the safety. A lot of people have their own idea as to why he dropped. He was projected to go somewhere in the first round. Why do you think he fell into the Giants' hands at the top of the second round?
Well, because I think he was overrated from the get-go, to be honest with you. I mean, early on, people were talking about Washington taking him with the sixth pick. I said, there's no way this guy's going with the sixth pick. He's just not that type of player. He's not a dominant all-around safety. He's a very good safety. I mean, he's solid against the run. He's solid in zone coverage when he's facing the action, struggles in man coverage, shows some indecision in his pass coverage recognition, if you will, does not do a good job recognizing routes. He's got the mouth-watering size. You know, he's got the measurables you want. You also factor in, you know, Alabama defensive backs, like their running backs, have not always lived up to expectations when they leave the Nick Saban system and go into the NFL. So I think he was first-round talent? Yes, but I had him as a late first-round choice. I never had him as a top 20, top 15, never even considered this guy as a top six pick. He's solid. He'll be very good in the Giants system. You basically want to have him face the action. You want to play him in lanes. You want to play him in zone. Don't ask him to cover a lot of area. Reduce his abilities, reduce his responsibilities if you're going to place him over the slot receiver, because I don't think he's very good there. But I just think, you know, it's like a TJ Clemmings and a few other people early in the process. A few people get enamored with these guys or over-enamored with these guys, and they overrate them. That's what I think happened with Collins.
Tony, how about mentally, in terms of his ability to line up a defense, coming into a pro defense and learning the system? Do you feel Landon Collins should hit the ground running in that regard, and his adjustment, at least mentally, to the NFL should be a pretty smooth one?
He should, because he has one of the best mentors, or played on one of the best coaches in college. And, you know, you should say that about all the defenders that come out of Alabama, because they play in an NFL-type system, and really Nick Saban extracts the most out of them when they're on the college level. For some reason, it doesn't always transition for those players when they get to the NFL, in part probably because Nick Saban's able to extract everything from those guys. But he definitely has the edge because of the system he played in Alabama. Again, I think with the Giants, it's just putting him in a situation where he's not going to get exposed, where he's basically going to play, putting him in a position where he can basically maximize his skills.
Based on where the Giants were at 40, Tony, they moved up to 33. They traded a fourth rounder and a seventh rounder, which I thought was very fair. I thought you might have to give up a three to move up that number of selections in the second round. Do you think the Giants got very good value for that trade? Was it a good move given Collins' value there in the first pick of the second round and given the Giants' needs at safety?
Well, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how Collins, you know, how he does, you know, come this fall. They didn't give away a lot to move up, so I understand why they made the trade. And you can say, listen, they got good value. They didn't give away the house to move up to get a guy that they targeted who also fills a need. Again, it's all on paper right now. I understand the move. I can see why they would make it. I'm just not one of those people who were ever overly enamored with Landon Collins. I think he's solid. I don't think he's special in any aspect.
Tony, in the fifth round, they took another safety, Mykel Thompson, out of Texas, played four seasons there. Talk about what stood out to you about him and what he could possibly bring to the table compared to Collins.
Yeah, this is a guy that if you follow me on Twitter, really, literally the minute after the Giants made the pick, I applauded them for this selection, because in my mind, this guy was one of the most underrated players at the safety position. He fell under the scouting radar for some reason. Should have got a combine invite. Really did nothing in the postseason, which is a shame. You know, he's not a guy who makes those highlight reel films. He's a solid athlete. He's not the greatest athlete. Doesn't have the great size. But what he doesn't have is mental lapses. He puts himself in a position to make plays on the ball. He helps out the cornerback in pass coverage. He can play over the slot receiver on occasion. He can man center field, go sideline to sideline. Good run defender. Not a great run defender, but a solid run defender. You're a well-rounded player. I think this was a steal of a pick in the fifth round. You know, I'm not going to say, well, the guy's going to be a starter or he can make all pros, but in a lot of ways, reminds me of Stevie Brown. You know, when he came out of Michigan, no one was paying attention to him. If you go back and you really watch the film, especially from his junior year, because I think, like Stevie Brown, Thompson was better as a junior than he was as a senior. You know, very well-rounded in all areas. doesn't have those mental breakdowns, can also play special teams for you. So I think this is really a big hit for the Giants in round five.
Hey, Tony, I want to follow up on Thompson for a second. I heard Jerry Reese say this at his draft press conference, and you seem to mimic it. So you would agree that Thompson's skill set and what he does well actually complements Landon Collins. So those two guys as a unit together, they would complement each other pretty well in the secondary.
You know, I look at Landon Collins as more of a strong safety, and I know that strong safeties are kind of like with the dinosaurs, they're out, no one uses them anymore, no one talks about them. But Landon Collins is more of your traditional strong safety. I believe Michael Thompson can be more of your traditional free safety, a guy who can play in center field, a guy who keeps the action in front of him, works well with the cornerbacks, can go sideline to sideline, covers a good amount of area, doesn't have the great body, doesn't have the great size, but is a terrific football player with excellent ball skills.
Talking with Tony Pauline, who covers the NFL draft for draftinsider.net, sort of making his way towards 2016, but we are still recapping 2015 here in terms of the Giants class. In terms of the safety roster makeup for the Giants, you know, what do you think could potentially be the ideal mix? You mentioned that Collins and Thompson could complement one another. They also have, based on last year's draft, Tony, Nat Burhe, and then Cooper Taylor, who was drafted a little bit further back. What type of complements do all of those guys bring to the table where you could see maybe two in particular mixing well with one another?
Well, Cooper Taylor is a lot like Landon Collins. He's a bigger, athletic, strong safety type. It's just a matter of him getting used to the next level of competition and stepping up. Cooper Taylor's got a tremendous amount of upside potential. Just played his college ball at Richmond, had an injury late in his senior season. Just a matter of him starting to pull it together. Burhe is not the athlete. He's sort of like Thompson. He's not a tremendous athlete, but he's a great ball football player. Terrific ball skills, very instinctive, you know, makes up for his lack of great athleticism with efficiency, taking proper angles to the action. So I think with the four guys that you mentioned, it's sort of a mix and match. You would assume that Landon Collins, or you gotta assume that they expect Landon Collins to fight for a starting job, and then the other three guys will basically fight it out for a starting job or on a rotational basis to see playing time.
Yeah, Tony, I want to jump to the third-round pick, Omabe Odighizuwa, and he's a guy that a lot of people at different points in this process had him as potentially a late first-round, early second-round type of pick. Why do you think you dropped to the third round? Was it mostly because of the concerns over his hip injury? And how do you view his upside and how he's going to play in his first year in the NFL?
Well, I think the hip had to do a lot with it, but I got to tell you something. As I tweeted out when the Giants made this pick, and I'm not a Giant homer or a Giant fan by any means, this is one of the most enjoyable guys I've watched watched on film for 3 years, although we didn't play in 2013, and I've seen a lot of them. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It wasn't too long ago the Giants mined gold out of the third round with a guy by the name of Justin Tuck.
That's right.
And if Olamide Odighizuwa stays healthy, they're going to be talking about him in the same vein, because I had said after the Senior Bowl, Odighizuwa should have been in first-round conversation. You look at his game. He doesn't have the great size, but that should come with physical maturity. 6'4 and change, 265 pounds, but he stacks well against the run. He's not a liability against the run. He plays big and strong. He holds the point of attack, and if he can't make the tackle, he does enough to hold up the offensive lineman so others can get to the ball carrier. He's a terrific pass rusher. He explodes off the snap. He's fast up the field. He can bend off the edge, change direction, catch the ball handler backside pursuit, shows ability in space. So if you want to use him in zone blitzes, backed off the line of scrimmage, he's athletic and agile enough to cover a lot of area. He's not going to embarrass himself or be a liability. In my mind, the guy is a complete player. Had the hip injury. I didn't see the MRIs. I really don't know how to read MRIs, but I'm sure people looked at the MRI and said, you know what, this may be a problem down the road, which is why he fell. But let me tell you something. If he is healthy, he just gets a little bit stronger. He's an intelligent, instinctive, intense football player. Giant fans are going to love this guy, and there's no doubt in my mind if he's healthy, and there's no reason to believe he's not going to be healthy, because I got to tell you, I watched him from the get-go. I think UCLA, off the top of my head, played Virginia early in the beginning of the season, and he just was like a bat out of hell. I mean, he basically, like, he didn't miss a beat.
Wow.
And he kept the momentum up, and he played great all year, and then he went to the Senior Bowl, and he knocked it out of the park at the Senior Bowl. So there's no reason for me to believe that the hip was ever an issue for him last year. I tell you something, Giant fans, watch this guy, because he's going to create an immediate impact, I believe, from the get-go of his rookie season.
Tony, at Jerry Reese's press conference, he mentioned that they envision him as not just an outside rusher, but a guy that they can move to the inside as well because he has some versatility. Is that a fair way to break down his game, that he's not your typical just edge rusher? There's more to his game?
Yeah, and it's absolutely, and it's because of a combination of things. I talked about, you know, the athleticism and the explosion. He's also, like I said, intelligent. He's got great instincts. Plays with great pad level. And to be an interior pass rusher, you don't have to be 300 pounds. But what you got to do is you got to play with excellent leverage. Bend your knees, keep your pads low to the ground. So if you can get underneath those blockers, you're going to be able to squeeze through the guard in the tackle or the guard in the center and get penetration up the field. He's got great first step quickness, fires off the snap, which always has opposing blockers playing back on their heels. So, yeah, not only that, is you could probably also stand them up on occasion and use them as a stand-up pass rusher if you want to do that. So, yeah, he is the complete package. I thought all along, if you looked at my board, I said he was a 1-2, which meant late first, early second-round pick, fell into the third round. This is, people want to talk about what a great value Landon Collins was. As far as I'm concerned, this is even better value for the Giants.
You know, Tony, one more quick one on Odighizuwa, because I know a lot of people talk about his lack of production. You don't see the big numbers in college in terms of sacks. But from what I understand, if you watch a lot of his tape, they didn't play him a whole lot at that seven technique outside the tackle. He played almost inside that tackle a lot, and they made his responsibility more stopping the run than rushing the passer. And that's one of the reasons his sack numbers weren't maybe as high as his talent might dictate.
Well, for two things. Number one, UCLA had very good interior players on the defensive tackle position. They also got a sophomore linebacker who's going to be a first-round pick moving forward, and he was the guy who was chasing the quarterback down and making all the plays. So they really didn't need Odighizuwa to make plays on the ball carrier. Go back to what I said about his ability against the run. Doesn't always get off the offensive lineman, doesn't always get off the blocker, but what he does is he stands the blocker up and he lets his teammates make plays on the ball. That's what happened a lot at UCLA.
Talking with Tony Pauline about the Giants draft class from 2015. Their final two picks, Tony, Jeremy Davis, the wide receiver out of UConn, and then Bobby Hart, the offensive lineman out of Florida State. Davis is viewed as a tall presence in terms of his ability on possessions to help move the chains. Is there more to his game than just that typical possession type of receiver? Because from what I've seen, you know, UConn did move him down the field, and he had a stellar 2013 campaign where he set all types of records for the Huskies.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, he ran in the 4.4s during his combine, and, you know, during his pro day. NFL combines, the pro day are as much about expectations as they are anything else. So when you get a guy like Jeremy Davis and he's expected to run a 4.55, a 4.6, and all of a sudden he lays down a 4.45, 4.47, eyebrows are raised. We're like, hey, this guy's a lot faster than we ever considered. They know he's a good receiver. The problem at UConn is horrible quarterback play. I mean, that's what it is. The program's been in a tailspin the last 4 years. Jeremy Davis is one of the few bright spots, along with Byron Jones, of that program really in the past 4 years. He did not live up to expectations. People expected more out of him during the 2014 campaign. But again, a lot of that was just basically an inept offense. He's a tall, sure-handed receiver. He's got a good body of work. He was also very good as a sophomore. If you watch the film as a sophomore, he stood out. Natural hand catcher, not a guy who lets the ball get inside his body, wins out for the contested passes, gets vertical, exposes himself to the big hit to come away with the ball. Now, all of a sudden, you look at his pro day, he runs a 4.45, 4.47. It's just a matter of coaching him to play to that speed onto the field. And you're right. He did have some nice vertical patterns, some nice downfield receptions in college. It's just a matter of having him do that consistently if that's what you want him to do, or at the very least, you know he can do that. I think that, you know, as a late-round pick, this guy's got basically the opportunity to add to what already looks like a strong, strong unit of wide receivers for the New York Giants. Could easily make it as a fourth or fifth receiver, good red zone threat. I know third and fives when you want a big target to throw the ball to out on the sidelines. Jeremy Davis is your guy, another very good pick for the Giants.
And how about Bobby Hart, their seventh round pick there, Tony?
Well, worth the pick. I mean, Hart was a tackle. He projects the guard. Not the greatest athlete, but a really tough slug-it-out guy. Best in a small area. He's got excellent size. He's a mauler. Didn't really get the headlines that he should have. They had a lot of talent on that Florida State offensive line. Somebody had a block for Jameis Winston the past 2 years, and Hart did a terrific job of it. So he's a guy, You know, I think he can make a roster as your eighth or ninth offensive lineman. If you keep nine offensive linemen, could be used as a rotational or a backup at the guard spot. Could also be used as a backup at right tackle. You know, definitely worth the flyer in the seventh round. Wouldn't be shocked at all if he makes an active roster.
Tony, before we let you go, when you look at this draft class as a whole, and I go back to the Giants draft class from 2014, there was depth there, and a number of those players, they had opportunities, and you look back, they contributed. If you were to look ahead, who in all likelihood could make the biggest impact for the Giants this coming season out of this year's class?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with my heart instead of my head, and I'm going to say Odighizuwa because I like the guy so much. I've watched him throughout his college career. I know what the type of player he was on UCLA till his progress was halted by that hip injury in 2013. The Giants need pass rushers. I think he's going to fit. You know, I think a guy like Tom Coughlin is just going to fall in love with this guy because of the way he works, because of his instincts, because of his football intelligence. I think he's going to get a lot of playing time. And the fact is if they free him up, he's going to be someone who attacks the quarterback and makes, if he doesn't get sacks, you're going to see a lot of quarterback hurries, a lot of quarterback pressures, someone who's going to cause an impact because, you know, they really got first-round talent in the third round with Odighizuwa.
Tony, final question for me before we say goodbye. Give me your 2016 first overall pick in the NFL draft.
Oh, boy, here we go. You know, I hate to go along with the crowd, but I'm going to say it's going to be the Cardale Jones kid from I'd like to pull something out of right field, but I'm going to say if he gets to play this year, Cardale Jones of Ohio State because,
wow,
as we've seen, doesn't matter how good you are or not, everyone wants the quarterback at the top of the draft. People thought that Jones of Ohio State was going to be a first-round pick this year. I never believed it. Not enough body work. You're not going to draft a guy in the first round who only played three games. He's got the physical skills. Just a matter of putting the entire package together. Of course, he's going to have some competition out there at Ohio State to see action underneath center, but he's got the skills, and I think he's got a bright future.
And I would bet that Ohio State running back, if he comes out, is probably going to be a first-round pick next year too, right?
Absolutely, but you know, as we saw, you know, running backs, unless they're Adrian Peterson types on the field anyway, aren't going to go top five, and it's the quarterback now. It's the pass rusher, the defensive lineman that are usually your top five selections.
Thanks, Tony. Great stuff as always, my friend. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Good luck. Thank you.
That's Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net. He said he's already working. I had to ask him about it.
Absolutely. It's never too early to start speculating.
Ezekiel, is that the Ohio State running back's name? I'm trying to remember the kid's name.
Yes,
he was a freshman
Ezekiel
last year.
Correct. And then I was going to mention Cardale Jones. I don't know if you saw the story on Twitter that he tried to joke around that he was transferring to Akron.
So that at least
created a whole storm.
So somewhere Dan Salamone is smiling. That would be the theme of that whole conversation.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
Big Ohio State fan. Tony, great stuff. Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net. Very bullish on Odighizuwa.
Very high.
And also, Mikel Thompson, someone that was, you know, frankly, a lot of people thought might be an undrafted free agent. He thinks the Giants got a steal there in the fifth round. So very, very interesting stuff from Tony. Let's go to your calls. We'll take you the rest of the way, 35 minutes, and we haven't really gotten Lance since the draft has ended. So let's get Lance's more comprehensive take on some of these picks as we move forward as well. Let's go to Patrick in North Carolina first. Patrick, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I just had a couple of things.
Yeah,
you already touched on some of it. With the secondary, I think we have enough bodies that are going to be in camp now, and you figure that he's going to be pushed, but Landon Collins is probably going to be your strong safety come week one. But it's going to be interesting to see where the free safety is going to be. And also, I think the really interesting position is going to be who's going to be our nickel corner. I mean, with the passing league the way it is, nickel corner is more important than ever in this league. And I know that, you know, we're not going to know where guys are going to land until the pads get on. But in an ideal world, where would you guys, or who would you guys see going into the free safety position and the nickel corner position?
Well, to answer your question about the nickel corner position, Patrick, I think Tremaine McBride enters the season as the favorite. I'm not saying he's going to solidify the job, but he's got the most experience there compared to the rest of the roster. So, to me, it's his job to lose, especially under the assumption that Prince Amukamara and DRC are going to be fully healthy and ready to assume the outside role. So, I would go with Tremaine McBride to answer your question there. with respect to free safety, you know, everybody seems to assign a lot of the players on the roster right now as strong safeties. The Giants, if you listen to the executive branch here, they feel Landon Collins has a great deal of versatility. And Alabama, in fairness, utilized him everywhere. Free safety, strong safety. He went into the slot a little. He was brought down to the box. I would not be surprised if Landon Collins is penciled in potentially as the free safety, and perhaps they use Nat Burhey as the strong safety. I think, you know, Burhey is intriguing to me. Right now, he's saying a lot of the good things. He's motivated. He's amped up. If that could translate to training camp.
Which is the hard part, by the way.
Of course. It's always difficult. But I'm only, like I said, at this point, I can only evaluate the words.
Absolutely.
Haven't seen much work on the field. I'm going based on the words. My money would be with him having a strong camp, or at least being a player to watch to try to solidify that strong safety position.
Hey, look, and Patrick, I would add this, too, is that, and I heard Jerry Reese again. He was on with Bob Papa and Salman Wilcox this morning on Sirius NFL Radio, and he made the point that they believe that Landon Collins is not just a strict strong safety. I know some people do disagree with this evaluation. The Giants believe that he can play in the box, he can play against the run, he can play center field, and he can cover people in the slot and cover tight ends and running backs and maybe even some slot wide receivers. So the Giants believe that he can do everything you need a safety to do. Now, much like with Nat Burhey, let's see him go out on the field and do it.
And I just have one more thing.
Sure.
My assessment, and I'll leave you guys to criticize my assessment after, and I'll listen on air. The Flowers pick, I thought it was a great pick. I thought he was the best tackle coming out. I thought we did a great job. He looks like he has good lateral movement. He moves well for his size. He has a good initial burst and punch off of the line. The only criticism I could see is that he allows defenders sometimes to get into his chest, which is more of a technique thing. But other than that, I mean, it looks like he was able to hold his own. I mean, you guys gave numbers yesterday. It didn't look like any of the premier pass rushers were able to really get a beat on him during the big games of his senior season. So maybe you guys can speak on that, and thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks, Patrick. I think Gil Brandt put a tweet up yesterday where he didn't give up any sacks against the Power Conference teams last year. I think it was actually zero the whole year. And if you go by Pro Football Focus or College Football Focus, I guess that's that part of their brand, they had one of the best pass blocking percentages in college football last year. So certainly very good. And go ahead.
I was just going to add, he went up against Randy Gregory, which is probably one of his most notable matchups, who went to the Cowboys in the Nebraska game.
Though he pointed out they moved Gregory to the other side a lot to avoid Flowers.
Well, I guess that speaks volumes then of the ability that Flowers has on those Power 5 pass rush.
You have a choice. You want to put him up against an aircraft carrier or put him up against maybe a destroyer or a cruiser? I would avoid the aircraft carrier.
I can't disagree with that sentiment. I would say that would be smart for Nebraska.
And this goes John F. at NH Giants. What does Tony think of the Flowers pick compared to other picks of him when the Giants picked at 9? He said he thought it was good value there. He said he talked about it, that he was offensive lineman that projects the left tackle eventually, and Jerry's reiterated that again, that he believes that he can be a franchise left tackle in a couple years. Maybe not right away, but in a couple years. And, you know, Will Beattie is, what, 3 years left on his contract? So he could theoretically down the road be that next step for Will Beattie when his contract is up. So the Giants got a long-term prospect at tackle that could be a very, very good football player.
Well, and that gets back to the aspect, John, as you just hit on, when you're drafting, you're not just drafting for this year. You're potentially drafting for a few years down the road. So, you know, the goal is get him on the field and put him in an ideal position where he can mesh with the rest of the offensive linemen. On top of that, you protect yourself in the event that you lose another player who happens to play his same position, whether it be through free agency or injury. So I think they protect themselves in various different degrees.
And I want to stress this again. People were, you know, people talk strong and free, and Tony made this great point. He goes, you know, people now, they don't really talk about strong and free safety anymore. That's kind of a dinosaur term, and maybe it's not a dinosaur term here with the Giants, but it's really not a title and differentiation that they use between the two safety positions. So the way Dave Merritt and the Giants defense always taught their safeties, and this is with Perry Fuel, and it was also with Steve Spagnuolo, they teach both safeties to do both things. So they have a left safety and a right safety, and both guys have to know both roles. And it's really a useful way to teach folks because that will allow you to disguise your defense. You don't know which guy's up, which guy's back, which guy's in the robber, which guy's playing single high deep, which guy's going to come down and crash, maybe who's going to blitz. If both safeties can do everything, it gives your defensive coordinator a lot of flexibility.
Plus, we're also seeing defenses where they utilize additional corners too, John, and I think it also relates to the subject, which is connected to the Giants, about the linebacker role. not just across the league, but in this defense, you know, how many times do the Giants utilize the scheme where the three linebackers are on the field for, you know, 90% of the downs? That's why, you know, a lot of fans always bring up, you know, it's important for the Giants to target a linebacker, but I think you also need to look at the style of defense that they've played and how many times do you always see three linebackers on the field? You see a number of secondary players that sometimes take the position of the linebacker. So schemes have changed and evolved over the last few decades. That's why it's not your standard prototypical setup anymore on defense. You need flexibility, you need versatility, and that's why you bring in players who can play multiple positions.
201-939-4513. Let's stick on the phones and go to EJ in Oakland. He was up next. EJ, what's up?
Johnny Boy and Sir Lancelot. How you guys doing?
Doing all right, EJ. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Hey, I wanted to first thank you both for doing such an amazing job over the years. Not only do us fans appreciate the hard work and time that both of you guys invest and put into the show, you know, and put it together for us fans, but, you know, you've also been a source of sanity for most of us. You know, with all of the Mel Kipers and Dan Grazianos and Skip Bayless's and Stephen A. Smith's out there, it's refreshing to hear a voice of reason on a day-to-day basis.
EJ, we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And the thing about what we do here, and this is the way me and Lance like to look at it, we actually talk about this. A lot of people out there, and, you know, it's not necessarily Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless's fault and Colin Cowherd's fault. They're paid to get ratings. And do you get ratings by saying ridiculous things? We like to keep things truth and fact-based here and keep things realistic and go off information and reality and not play fantasy games like other people out there do. So we're happy we can provide that role. It is what we try to do here. We try to keep things level. We try to keep things realistic. And we hope we can do that for Giant fans.
EJ, I'm glad that we're keeping you sane because, you know, I can't explain why I go drinking after every one of these shows. So maybe you can explain that. But anyway, continue. Glad you enjoyed the program.
Yeah, definitely, guys. Thanks again. And I get that. I really wanted to discuss some of the certain fans that come on here on a day-to-day basis, you know, that continually provide, you know, a negative perspective on things. You know, like Charlie and Frank, you know, it's totally one thing to be objective. It's one thing to be critical. It's one thing to be skeptical. That's what makes us reasonable human beings. But when you call onto a show almost every single day and do nothing but chastise the establishment that you presumably, quote unquote, are fans of, you know, I have to seriously question their sanity. You know, both of these guys come on here every day almost. And it's just like a soggy bowl of cornflakes for each of them, you know,
EJ,
day, no matter what the news, good or bad. They refuse to see any silver lining whatsoever.
EJ, I will never argue that Charlie and Portland Maine the same. So don't take this as me trying to argue that Charlie's sane, because I'm not trying to do that. But look, here's the thing. Fans have their opinions. Some fans are happier fans and optimistic. Others can be a little bit more pessimistic and, you know, maybe look at things with a cup half empty. The bottom line is that all viewpoints are valid, and we like people calling in, going back and forth. And look, sometimes we argue with people who, you know, see sunshine and roses everywhere when it's not always sunshine and roses. Other people see, you know, polluted oceans and, you know, whatever all the time, where it looks like, you know, you're descending into the sixth level of hell, and it's not necessarily that either. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we all go through ups and downs as fans. It's just, it's when there's no upside. You know, Charlie keeps on pushing Danica. I think we should start pushing Prozac. That's all I'm saying.
That's an intriguing way.
That's a really good line, EJ. That's funny.
Honestly, I mean, there's been times where, I mean, when I hear him on the radio, I try not to turn him off. I don't, but, you know, it just gets to that point, you know. So I just want to make sure that they understand, because I know that they're hearing this, that he did start, you know, doing something more productive and seeing the silver lining, because, guys, we got a great franchise here. We got something good going on here. The draft was really great. Our team is rebuilding, you know, like we got an awesome franchise quarterback. The coaches are awesome. The front office is awesome. You know, I just hope they realize this one day and that, you know, they back themselves off the ledge, because I'm sure the Eagles fans could use some more fans out there. You know what I'm saying?
I think if I talk to somebody upstairs, I might be able to find the spot for EJ in our marketing department upstairs.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I tell you.
Holy cow.
You may have to have him work some games and give out flyers and jerseys and all that good stuff.
Do you have a point on the team itself?
Out here in Oakland, you know.
you start out on the West Coast, you move your way back here. I like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have any point on the team, EJ?
No, that's it. I just wanted to say that. Thanks again, guys. You guys are great.
Thank you, EJ. Well, Charlie and Portland Maine smiling, because whenever you have callers calling up just to talk about you, that means you've made it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All publicity is good publicity.
He loves that. He's not irritated. He's sitting back. He's marking it down in his notebook.
You know, it's funny.
Another guy dislikes my point of view.
We talked to him. I think we talked to him on Saturday morning. Charlie was thrilled with the draft. He was
really
so happy. He loved the Landon. You know, he always wants to trade up. So he loved the Landon Collins pick. He liked Odighizuwa. Then he called in yesterday, and he was back down the dumps again.
Of course. Well, you know, it's up and down. Polluted ocean.
I
like
Charlie,
that. I'm going to use
great.
That one. Yeah.
Well, I was trying to think, you know, of like a very like dreadful. I was thinking like, you know, like a polluted bog where you're slogging through and you're in swamps and, you know,
yes,
you got like,
all that lovely stuff. And what was it, the sixth layer of hell? That
sixth
you
layer
used
of
to?
Hell, yes.
Okay, well, we got to quote some
or,
of your,
or perhaps maybe like a scene out of The Walking Dead. I could have used that as a metaphor.
You could have done that. See,
walking
now
around
you're
like zombies everywhere.
No, see, now all of a sudden things are evolving.
You like
you
that
know,
one.
You give it a little time.
Yeah, in
retrospect. That's workable. That's workable.
In retrospect, I should have went in that direction. I didn't think of it until now, though.
So understand, he put you on the spot.
Yeah.
You weren't sure where you wanted to go. We'll leave it at that.
All right. People have been holding longer, but I have to go to him since he's on the line.
Boy, that didn't take too
no,
long.
No, it did not. Chuckles, how are you?
Hey, I heard my name, so I had to I had to call in.
Ears must have been burning.
Hey, guys.
How are you, Charlie?
I'm good, actually. Hey, I'm glad I have such an effect on people, negatively or positively.
I knew you would. I knew you would.
And just for the last call, I didn't get his name, but
EJ.
Hey,
he's a part of your fan club. How'd you not get his name? He's a part of your fan club.
I love the players. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to love management if I don't think they're making the right decisions on some occasions. And I didn't think Jerry Reese made some good decisions in free agency. But anyway, I'm all hope now. That's done. Free agency's done. The draft is done. We have what we have, and I'm all hope. We'll see what happens, see what develops. So I'm all good now. So,
excellent.
You know, I'm going to try to be as less negative as possible. You notice I didn't say more positive. I just said less negative as possible.
And that's one way to spin it.
And, you know, we'll see what happens. And my question to you is, do you think on the roster right now, because we don't know what's going to happen, who is our two starting free? Who's our two starting safety?
If I had to guess right now, Charlie, I'd say it's going to be a competition. And my guess is right now the guys that would win it would probably be Collins and Burhey. But would it shock me if maybe Josh Gordy, you know, beats Nat Burhey out for one of the spots? It wouldn't shock me. Until Cooper Taylor stays healthy, I wouldn't be willing to place the bet on him. I think he is the talent, but I got to see him stay healthy first. So if I had to guess, that would be my guess. But would it also surprise me if by June 1st, if a veteran safety gets cut loose, you know, another one gets brought in here? That wouldn't shock me either.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I just don't, you know, I know our safeties are left and right, and it's not really strong or free.
Yeah.
I just don't know if Burhey is a guy that could be, you know, play the deep safety. You know, I just don't know. I know he's a hitter, and he was, you know, that in-box type of guy, but I don't know.
Well, we'll see.
Did he ever even take a snap at safety last year at all?
He did. For Stevie Brown.
Yeah, I think last few games he ran some snaps at safety. I can actually check Pro Football Focus and give you the exact number if you want.
Nah, that's right. I just didn't know if he actually did or not. That's all.
Well,
I'm all hope, guys. So we'll see what happens. I still haven't changed my prediction. 8-8. That's what I see right now, and I'm going to stick with that. I think part of the draft was good, and part of the draft wasn't, as I see it. But we actually got three linebackers in undrafted free agency. No, actually only one, and then two are coming in as invitees. So maybe one of those guys will be Chase Blackburn. Who knows? So
thank you, Charlie.
We need somebody to back up, decent. So thanks, guys.
All right, Charlie.
Appreciate it.
And we should point out the Giants have not announced any of their undrafted free agent signees, if any have occurred yet. Anything out there is just reports. So once we know who the guys are, we'll be happy to talk about them. But until we get the announcement and the Giants make it official, we can't talk about any of these names that have been floating out there as potential undrafted free agent signings. 201-939-4513. I'll try to get that snap number for Burhey as we go to our next call.
Well, I don't know the snap number off the top of my head, but I do know that there was a game where Burhey came in the second half, I believe, John, and did get some snaps at safety.
That was probably after he hurt his foot, right, Stevie Brown?
Correct, exactly. That was that game. I forget which game that was, but there was times where Burhey did get some snaps at safety. Obviously, most of his production came on special teams, which is normal for a late-round pick of his caliber based on where he entered in this league. But Burhey did get some snaps, more so than, you know, the rest of the group, if you're to evaluate the roster. Remember, Cooper Taylor was on IR the whole season.
Right.
So he wasn't out there at all in the capacity of a safety. Josh Gordy wasn't with the team, and Landon Collins just came aboard. So in terms of the experience department, Burhey, based on last season, had the most snaps at safety compared to anybody else on the current roster.
Jeff in New Hampshire, you're up next at 201-939-4513. What's up, Jeff?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you, pal?
Good. I was just calling to make sure Paul was okay after Washington drafted Sheriff. I was a little nervous.
Yeah,
there.
You know what? So was I, because I texted him right after the pick, and I did not get a text back till the next morning. So I heard he was passed out. I heard he was passed out under the table in the media room.
That wouldn't surprise me.
What's going on, Jeff?
Not much. I guess I want to start off by thanking you guys for turning me into an official draft nerd. I have to say, I never used to follow the draft like I do, like I have the last 2 years until I discovered this show.
Well, I appreciate that. Jeff, you know, it's funny, until we started doing the show, I never got into the draft as much as I did either. So doing the show has gotten me into it, and I'm happy that I've gotten other people into it, too. By the way, Nat Burhey played 32 snaps at safety last year, 32.
No, that's right. I used to wait and see who we drafted and then kind of research them a little bit. But yeah, this has been a lot of fun the last 2 years.
Thank you.
And we can take a lot of pride in the fact that the Giants fan beat the Cowboys fan Thursday night in our mock draft challenge.
Oh, did
so
they?
He's now paying for the beer for opening night Giants-Cowboys game. Thanks for that.
Very good.
So I feel like you guys are a big part of that. So that was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
Couple of comments you guys made yesterday I think are really good, and I just kind of wanted to elaborate on the giving grades to a draft class like the day they happen or the day after they happen. I've been saying for so many years how just ridiculous that is, because until like you guys are saying, until they play, who the heck knows how your class went? I think it's kind of absurd that we're already writing off players from last year or the year before's draft. When I look back at some of our players, like say Michael Strahan, for example, he was a second round pick. He didn't really do much his first 2 years, if you go back.
Absolutely.
He ends up having a Hall of Fame career. And, you know, I'm looking at players now, like even DeMontre Moore, it feels like half our fans are writing him off as a wasted pick or somebody that's not going to contribute because he hasn't set the world on fire his first 2 years. Neither did Michael Strahan his first 2 years.
Yeah, actually, I will bring that up right here for you, Jeff, just so fans understand, because it was a long time ago, and a lot of the younger fans probably don't know this, but in Michael Strahan's, I'll list his first 4 years. Michael Strahan's rookie year was 1993. He had one sack, played in 9 games. 1994, yep, played in 15 games, had 4.5 sacks. 1995, he played in 15 games, had 7.5 sacks. And then in 1996, he only had 5 sacks in 16 games. So it wasn't until his fifth season in 1997 that he had more than 7.5 sacks. So you're right. He was a late bloomer.
Yeah, I mean, he made the Pro Bowl in 97, and I mean, you got to remember, too, defensive ends do more than we kind of judge players only on their sack numbers. He was still great against the run,
yes.
So it wasn't like he wasn't contributing, but no, he didn't make a Pro Bowl till his fifth year. So that's why I'm always saying with these drafts, you got to see what these guys become, and this kind of hits on another point you made about high expectations for rookies. You know, I think part of it's because of the expanded draft coverage, because of the growing popularity of the sport. We have to talk about football 365 days a year. So for the last 3 months, we've had nothing better to talk about than the draft.
Yep.
So I feel like a lot of fans think that one pick or two picks is going to take their team from worst to first. You know, this isn't basketball where one player has that kind of impact. This is football where you have some rookies come in and do great things. You know, the Randy Mosses, the Odell Beckhams, and, you know, a handful of others we could name, but those are fewer and further between. And it takes more than one or two players. If your team had that many holes, you know, just because your team needs a tackle and you draft a tackle, that doesn't mean you fixed all your problems. So I think we get too high of expectations placed on, what are these kids, 21, 22, 23? And unless they're playing in the SEC, I mean, it's the difference between college and the pros is like playing against boys and men.
Yep.
It's a totally different game. So when these expectations are through the roof on these rookies, I mean, you made the perfect point yesterday. Flowers is going to miss a block on Kerrigan, or Collins is going to get beat over the top by Jones. And half of these fans are going to be calling up saying he's a bust, he was a terrible pick, and, you know, all kind of just ridiculous things. I just feel like it's part of this instant gratification society. We don't have any patience to let players develop. And, you know, I'm pretty excited about the draft class on paper. I loved our class last year. I think that could end up being one of our best classes ever, at least in the last 10 years anyway. And, even the class in 2012. DeMontre Moore's 23 years old. So is Ruben Randle. He's going into his fourth year.
Right.
These guys are 23. There's rookies coming into the league that are older than 23. So you got to give these guys a chance. I mean, I still think they have a great chance, and I think on paper this looks like a good draft, but you can't give it a grade, and people are worried about Nat Burhe, fifth-round pick. Cam Chancellor was a sixth-round pick. Richard Sherman was a fifth-round pick.
That whole secondary was late-round picks, Jeff, to answer your question.
Exactly.
Undrafted.
Not all times.
No. Well, I mean, but everybody pretty much outside of him was a late draft pick.
Absolutely.
A guy found on the street. So we've seen that time and time again.
Thanks,
and we've
Jeff.
Seen it with respect to the Giants.
Thanks,
so I appreciate the phone call, Jeff. Yeah, he brought up the point about the NBA, and the NBA tends to be a superstar-driven league. The NFL is not necessarily a superstar-driven league.
Yeah, obviously, once the Knicks get Karl-Anthony Towns in this draft, they're going to turn around the franchise very quickly.
Yes. Whatever caters to your needs, obviously, will change the viewpoint of the sport. But getting back to the big picture of things, the NFL is not a superstar-driven league. There's multiple facets.
Except you have a superstar quarterback, then it helps.
Of course, it does help. But we've seen some unsung heroes.
Of course.
And players who don't come in to the league with, you know, heavy accolades and all of a sudden turn into quality players. So, you know, you can't necessarily assume, well, we bring in one or two great players, voila, the course of our franchise is going to change.
I like the voila.
Yes, I know. Just, I threw that in for a little
And I
want
to build on what Jeff talked about in terms of letting players develop. And I want to go back to the NBA for a second. Look at the guy that just won the MVP yesterday, Steph Curry. He wasn't highly recruited out of high school. He went to a small school, came into the NBA, injury riddled his first couple years with ankle injuries. A lot of people thought, you know, maybe he's never going to make it. Maybe he's too thin. He's too slight. He can't play defense well enough. And he has worked hard, and he's developed himself into one of the top three, top five players in the NBA, where he was the best player on the best team this year. And I thought there was a good argument for two or three different guys to win MVP, but he was certainly deserving of the award. I probably would have voted for him too. And you let players develop. And an even better example, talking about how guys struggle in their first year, last year Lance was considered a very strong draft, generally speaking. It was considered very strong, okay? I'm going to go through the first top 10 picks. We're going to count how many guys had big impacts or significant impacts in their rookie year, right? Let's start counting. First pick overall, Jadeveon Clowney. That's a no.
Plagued by injuries.
Second pick, Greg Robinson. Struggled.
He struggled. He was moved around, did different positions too.
Third pick, Blake Bortles. Struggled first year. No. Fourth pick, Sammy Watkins, Bills. Good season. That's a yes. Fifth pick, Khalil Mack. Good season.
Great season.
Yes. Sixth pick, Jake Matthews. He was okay. He was in and out.
But they had injuries, and they had to move him around.
So you know what? I'll give him a yes. I'll be generous. But I think he's on the fence, okay? Pick six, Mike Evans. Good impact.
Solid season.
Good.
Yeah.
Pick eight, Justin Gilbert. Brutal rookie year. No. Pick nine, Anthony Barr. Came on late. I'd say good rookie year, right? So that's five.
I think there's upside.
And then pick number 10, Eric Ebron. Very disappointing rookie season.
He was hurt, too.
So you're looking at 50%.
Yeah.
And that's the top 10 picks.
Of course.
Those are the 10 best players in the draft last year. Five had impacts their rookie year, and five were disappointments. So let's just slow the roll here. I mean, there's a good chance Eric Flowers could have a rookie year just like Greg Robinson did last year. And Jake Matthews, where they're in and out, they're battling injuries, they're moving around, and you know what, maybe he's going to struggle a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what rookies do. And I'm not telling you that's what's going to happen. Maybe he'll come in, he'll be great. He'll be like Zach Martin last year, step in and be dynamite right away. That could happen. But I just think you have to be ready for stumbles when it comes to rookies.
Well, I'll even throw out Victor Cruz. Now, Victor Cruz wasn't drafted, John, but look at his track as a player here with the Giants organization. He came this close to being cut.
Well, yeah.
He
hurt his hamstring his rookie year and had to sit out.
And he had, remember, against that Redskins game?
All the drops. Yep.
People
were already bailing out Odell Beckham after four games last year with a hamstring injury. So it's all about being patient, folks. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Nana is in Georgia. We haven't heard from Nana in a while. What's going on, Nana?
Hi, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great. How are you?
How's everything with you?
I'm good. Well, I'm off today, so I figured I'd call in and see how you guys are doing.
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I think we did get some good picks or whatever, but as far as this year goes, I'm going into this year with very... Well, I would say, like, no high expectations. That way I won't be disappointed.
What are your expectations? What are you hoping for, Nana?
Well, a winning season where we can win what I will want, but I'm not gonna do that to myself because I was very disappointed last year and the year before. So I figure if I come in this season with no expectations and if they do good, then I'm happy. you know. But other than that, I'm just going to sit back and watch, you know. That's pretty much where I am right now. I don't want to disappoint myself 3 years in a row, you know. So that's where I am. I hope that Victor Cruz is able to come back to full form, you know, this year, or like, you know, close to what he was before. Then will still be good. You know, I'm really, you know, pulling for him. But I think I will be okay because, you know, anybody that knows me knows I'm a Jameis Winston fan. So if my Giants are doing bad, I could root for him, you know.
Well, just remember, the Giants play the Bucks this year, so you got to get past that game first.
I know. And I was hoping that it would probably be at the MetLife Stadium. That way I was going to try to see about going, but we'll see. But either way, you know, I'm rooting for my Giants. If Jameis Winston wins, then I'm happy too.
Well, you know what, Matt, hold on a second. Tampa can't be that far away from Georgia. Why don't you just drive down to Tampa?
Well, I'm actually, by then, I should be up north because been up north.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll get to see you guys at one of the games.
Absolutely. We look forward to that. Yep.
Absolutely.
Y'all can finally meet the person who people call complaining about or tweeting complaining about.
Everyone complains because they love Nat. I remember that.
I know, right?
Except Charlie, of
Well,
course.
All right, well, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to say hi. You know, I haven't talked to you guys in a while. Y'all take care.
Thank you, Nat.
Good to hear from you,
Nat. Good to hear from you.
Appreciate the call.
See, a little off day.
All right.
Get a little off day. You get a little BBK on at lunchtime. Get a little, you know, maybe a little grilled cheese. Get to enjoy a little BBKL.
Of all the foods, okay. I was just wondering why grilled cheese
came to
mind.
When I'm off from work and I'm at home and I don't want to go out and order some food, a nice little grilled cheese. Make it in the frying pan.
Would you throw in a milkshake with that?
A milkshake's a little hard to make at home. A blender.
You gotta
mash up. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You got to clean the blender.
High maintenance, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not the one that has to make a milkshake to be happy. What are you, like, 8 years old?
I
need a milkshake for dessert?
Did I say the goal was to make you happy? I just said it was a balanced meal. Grilled cheese, french fries, and a milkshake.
That's first of all, that is not even close to being balanced because I'm already getting my dairy out of the grilled cheese, so I don't want more dairy out of the milkshake.
Goodness gracious.
You got to get some fruit in there is what you got
to
get.
Yes. Well, I was going to get to the contents of the shake. Can
you
not put
please.
Some fruit in
and
there?
Now you're starting to bop, skip, and bedaddle over here.
I put a lot of different contents.
What do you have, strawberry in it?
I put banana, too, in there as well.
Well, that's not a milkshake. That's a smoothie.
That's a milkshake.
No,
with
a milkshake
added
and a smoothie are two completely different things.
Oh, now we're getting to different classifications.
Milkshakes and smoothies are very different. Smoothies are a nice, healthy thing where you can get some good nutrients.
So, see, that's why I'm looking for balance.
Milkshakes is a gluttonous dessert that you want when you want to spoil yourself.
I guess it depends on what type of milk, though, you put in. Is it fat-free? Is it full milk? Is it whole?
But you still put ice cream in there.
Yes, you are. I don't know. Maybe it's fat-free ice cream, or maybe you're going with frozen yogurt as opposed to ice cream. Did you ever think of that? See, there's a lot of technicalities that have to be brought into the conversation.
Get a milkshake, you're going all out. You're not milking a milkshake and then going halfway and going like fat-free, you know, yogurt garbage.
Things taste good that are, you know, potentially
fat-free. Well, then have a smoothie. And I have a nice little fruit smoothie every morning. It's delicious, but I don't call it a milkshake.
Well, that would be here, though, just the class.
Well,
you're certainly not
true.
Making that, okay? We know that.
That
you're
might
walking
be true.
Into the cafeteria, you're like,
In
may
fairness,
I get another, please?
I make it here.
Uh-huh.
I don't take one of the pre-made ones. I make it here, and I clean out the whole thing in the sink myself, so nothing's dirty when I'm done. I'm a good employee.
Wow.
I don't leave dirty
I've got to see
sink
this.
For other people.
Honestly, this is the first time I'm hearing.
Ask the kitchen staff. They see me every day.
We're going to have to examine this after this program.
Absolutely. All right.
I have a whole feature
I've
on
wasted
it as well.
Enough time. Shakes will wrap up our show for us. Shakes, hello.
What's going on, fellas?
How are you?
What are we doing here? Talking about smoothies and milkshakes?
That's right, yeah.
Well, Lance needs some education.
No, I don't need any
understand
education.
Understand the difference between a smoothie and a milkshake.
I need to give John some motivation, that's all.
Wow.
So help us get back to planet Earth. How's everything?
You want shakes to get us back to planet Earth? You're asking the wrong guy.
Real quick. All right.
By the way, should we note, you know, shakes? It's hard to get off topic considering the name. Anyway, I know that was bad. I just want to.
Oh, wow. That was a rough one,
Kettle. Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I know. It's been a long program. Anyway, continue, shakes.
Terrible.
Yes.
That was a bad transition.
Yeah, you should have.
I was hoping
you
to rescue me, Shakes, but you know you weren't that animated.
No,
he just lets you hang out to dry. And
well,
you,
of course
you're hanging,
he did.
Right?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, you
I am hanging.
Saved
so
that
that's
one,
right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything for the next few.
But
minutes.
All right, let me speak on this draft. Don't get me wrong. Before I get a little negative, and I'm sorry, Giant fans. I know y'all don't like it, but I got to. I got to get it off my chest. But before I do that, I wanted to say that this was a great draft. I think they got a lot of players that going into the draft, if you would have told me that they was going to be Giants, I would have said, okay, you know, all right, yeah, that's cool. I'll live with that. Especially Landon Collins being aggressive with going up and getting him. You needed a safety. You got the best safety in the draft. That's great. Double O, I consider him a first-round talent. When I did my big board, he was very high up on there. So I like the pick. I'm just a little concerned about the hips, but we'll see. My issue, and everybody already knows my issue that listens to the Shakedown, is, and I think y'all already know it too, because I come on every year and say this.
You want linebacker. A linebacker. Where's the linebacker?
Yep. Yep. You got it. You got it. Every year, we poop on these linebackers.
Oh, there we go, the poo-pooing.
Yep.
And by the way, Shakes, you know what? I want to say something. I don't know if you noticed it. I think it was on NFL Network's draft coverage. Did you know that Aaron Curry got a plug during NFL Network's draft coverage over the weekend? Somebody was talking about a can't-miss linebacker, and one of the guys on the panel goes, yeah, what, like Aaron Curry was a can't-miss linebacker? I lost it. I was dying for like 5 minutes.
You see, I wasn't the only one saying he had high potential. He just didn't meet it. Aaron Curry. And about that Aaron Curry, like, people would like to keep on discredit me about the Aaron Curry thing. And I always say, and I try to tell everybody, that was hope-based, man. I was hoping on potential and all that. We needed linebackers because I've been complaining for 5 years. We don't go linebacker. I needed some linebacker to come out of the woodwork and do something. Beeson came. Thank God for him. But these linebackers, I'm going to just say one thing about these linebackers, and then I'm going to get off the air with. But when I look at top defenses in the league every year, they always have a dominant linebacker. And so, to me, I feel like in order to have a dominant defense, you have to have a dominant linebacker.
What if Devon Kennard's that dominant linebacker?
I don't think he is. I think he's very good. Don't get me wrong. And I had this conversation with Tremaine Anderson. But he's like a B type of player, you know? Hey, he's very good. He's going to fill that role. But I want a dominant linebacker that sets the tone out there that just offenses is afraid of. They are looking at this guy distinctly, you know? So that's what I want. I just want a dominant linebacker to be a dominant defense, and if you have a dominant defense, you can be a dominant team. And that's my point about it. Now, I love the picks. I'm hoping that we do good, but I just don't see that we will be a dominant team until we get a dominant linebacker. So, Jerry Reese, please start to value these linebackers high. Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
All right, Shakes, appreciate the phone call. One thing I'll throw out in relation to what Shakes was talking about with respect to Devon Kennard. Remember, you got a new defensive coordinator, John. Who knows how that defensive coordinator is going to utilize Kennard? You know, may have a set amount of plays and a scheme that he envisions utilizing him where he may develop into a new skill set.
And I'll throw this out there, too. Shakes, you do have two brand new linebackers on the team, and JT Thomas and Jonathan Casillas. Let's see how those guys do in the new system, too. So, I think you have a couple new pieces there. You have Kennard, a year older, a year better. Look, and a guy always makes a big jump his second year in the NFL. And then you have, of course, JT Thomas and Casillas. Maybe they'll be able to do something. So here we go. I've got a couple tweets for you right here. At Colwis88, no way Burhey isn't one of the starting safeties, barring an injury, just watch. And I'll combine that with at Big Blue Beckham. I think our week one starters are Landon at strong safety, Mikel. Is it Michael or Mikel?
I saw it as Mikel.
Mikel, I agree
with
that.
That's what I saw it as.
What do you guys think about that? I don't know. I'd have to go back and look or maybe find a research or look it up for me. What's the last time an NFL team started two rookie safeties on week one? I mean, that's got to be a law. That's got to be a long time ago, right?
I'll be honest with you. I was trying to find, connected to that, I was looking for the last time the Giants drafted two safeties in the same year, and I couldn't even find that. I went all the way back to 1990. I got tired. I was like,
should ask Tino. He probably knows.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
Well, 1965, they drafted Butch Wanninger and Timmy O'Toole.
Yeah, you're probably right. No, knowing him, he'd probably roll it off his tongue. But I went back almost two decades. I couldn't find one. So, I mean, maybe if it's in the 80s or the 70s.
So I would be very leery of starting two rookie safeties in the same backfield. I think that's risky. And again, guys, look, Nat Burhe, I think he has a great chance of winning the job, but he's got to do it. You know, we got to see it. 30 snaps of safety last year. 30. That's not even half a game worth of snaps at safety. So let's see him do it before we start giving him jobs. And trust me, that Tom Coughlin's going to say that too. He's got to earn this thing. He's not going to give it to him.
Of course, but putting that in perspective, John, compared to the rest of the roster, that's actually a great deal of experience.
Well,
considering there's a number of young guys at safety.
Right,
I mean, I'd be curious. I don't know. On that chart that you have, do you have how many snaps Cooper Taylor has taken at safety?
Oh, I think it's zero.
Well, I'd be curious even in the preseason how many snaps.
I mean, that would be at least interesting to see. 2014 preseason.
Let's see.
Pro Football Focus all over it. Let's see. Pro Football Focus last year in the preseason, Nat Burhe took 165 snaps at safety, and our man Cooper Taylor took 104.
Okay. So they do have some preseason experience.
I could check Cooper Taylor in 2013 if you like, though I think he got hurt pretty early in 2013.
Hurt pretty early.
I don't know if he took many snaps at all in the preseason. He had 32 snaps in the preseason 2 years ago. So there you go. About 180 for each guy in the preseason. So that is some preseason experience. A couple other tweets lands very quickly. Tag Rocket, only five can't-miss players in the draft: Leonard Williams, Dante Fowler, Shane Ray. I disagree on Shane Ray. Kevin White and Amari Cooper. Why not trade up for one of them? Well, would you like to have Landon Collins on your team? Would you like to have Odighizuwa on your team? Because if you trade up, it costs you your two and your three. Then you know what? No Landon Collins, no Odighizuwa. Would you rather have Eric Flowers and those two guys, or would you rather just have one of those guys? I'll take the three. Thank you very much. And I don't even think twice about it. Let's see. And Tag Rock, another good point. All due respect, DJ. Everyone has their own opinion. Charlie was right on last year with his prediction. He did hit the 6-10 on the mark. That is true. Got to say that. Two questions, and I know Giant fans are very concerned about this. At JCS 2008, do you think Odell Beckham will make the Madden cover? And at Big Blue Beckham, can you please address the Madden cover for all Paranoia fans? I mean, come on. It's I'm guessing that means it's nonsense or it's bogus. I don't see the rest of the jinx.
Has anyone gotten hurt recently that's been on the cover? I want to say no. I think it's been at least 2 years without an injury.
But you can look up Madden cover history.
Yeah, I don't believe anybody's gotten hurt recently. So as far as I'm concerned, as the tweeter was alluding to, it may have been something that we could throw out the window here.
There we go. Images for Madden cover. That should have the history on there. Here we go.
That only goes to 07.
How about this one right there? No?
I think that's the same
photo.
That's the
same one. How about that one up there? Looks like he has all of them.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So we have 2015. Why'd you change the photo on me?
Oh, I didn't realize that was the right one.
That was the wrong one.
Come on, we'll go back. Now you're scrolling all over the place. Relax. You point out which one is it that you want me to click on?
I want to see that one.
You want this one. All right. We'll appease to you.
Here we go. This goes to 11. Is that 11 too?
I saw 2015 somewhere.
I thought I saw Cam.
I didn't see anything with 2015
somewhere.
On. But we could.
There we go. There's a 15 right there. There we go.
Well, Richard Sherman was on last year.
Last year, Richard Sherman. So that obviously was not a curse of any kind. So I wouldn't worry about that. What else do we got here? Madden 25. Oh, that was the Barry Sanders retro cover.
13 was Calvin.
And then he had a bad year that year.
12.
Is that Hillis? That looks like Peyton Hillis to me.
It does look like Peyton Hillis.
The last couple years haven't been too bad since they put Barry Sanders on there. But going back before that, and that was a rough year for the Saints at 11, if I recall. So, yeah. Look, guys, it's all jokes aside. It's a cover of a video game. It's not going to have any impact on anything. So I wouldn't worry about it. It doesn't help. but I wouldn't worry about
it. I really think it's a mythical type of thing.
No, the Indians were on the cover of the Sports Illustrated preview issue. How'd that work out?
Here we go. I mean, listen, there's enough evidence to prove certainly that players have struggled, but I don't know if you could be overly concerned
about that. No, I would not
into the vote.
I would not waste any of your valuable time on that at all. Go watch the Bulls Cavs like Lance and invest all your energy into that, and don't worry about the Madden cover. You must be hot, flying pretty high there, eh, Junior?
It's one game. I don't put my expectations through the roof. I put things in perspective. One game. Three more to go.
You actually owe the Knicks a big favor, a big thank you. J.R. Smith
manager
is going to throw that whole Cavs team into disarray with that suspension. You guys might be up 2-0 because J.R. Smith punched somebody in the face.
We'll see.
That's what J.R. Smith does in the playoffs.
Shumpert had a good game.
J.R. Smith, suspension waiting to happen. And it's always from round one going into round two also.
Correct. Because he takes the first few games to, you know, look at the layout of the land. And then he finds his target. And then he goes for the kill.
Well, and you got to worry about it, too. You know, the whole thing, him going to Cleveland, he got better because Cleveland doesn't have a big club scene. What happens when the series changes his venue to Chicago? There'll be some places for J.R. to hang out.
It's fair enough. Yeah.
I'd be worried about that if I was a Cavs fan.
Well, they're just worried about getting him back on the court, I think, at this point.
I'm telling you, I don't like the matchup for them in that series. I think the Bulls win that series in six games.
No, right now, I think in terms of depth, I think the Bulls have a significant edge.
Bad loss.
That's what a series like this comes down to.
By the way, bad loss for Houston last night. Without Chris Paul, that's a bad loss.
And they were in control of that game early on.
Second quarter, they're up by about 6-7 points. But their defense was terrible.
They've never been known as a strong defensive team. Live and die by the three. It comes back to bite you.
James Harden, 9 turnovers. Rough go of it.
Yeah. I still think Golden State's going to come out of
the
West.
So you say Wizards, Bulls, and then Golden State and Houston or L.A.?
I think Houston will win the series ultimately.
I think the Clippers
are going to
win
that series.
Really? I think Clippers, I think it'll be Clippers and Warriors. And I still think the Hawks, they shot really poorly in that first game, the Hawks. I felt they missed a lot of open shots. I say that one possession in the fourth quarter where they missed about 4 shots in one possession.
Well, they had that possession with the Nets too, remember?
They did. So I think that series will go 7. Clippers, Hawks and Wizards, rather. I think it'll be a good game 7. I think the Wizards will probably win the series, but I think the Hawks have a better chance than a lot of people giving them.
I do think the Hawks have a better chance, but I like the Wizards coming out of that series. I think Paul Pierce gives them a huge edge.
I worry about Millsap and Horford being banged up, too. I worry about that.
And Korver hasn't been, you know, a consistent guy. He's been very streaky during the postseason. And he was much more consistent in the regular season.
All right, bud, we're back tomorrow.
Absolutely.
You seem very excited about that.
Oh, you know, I mean, clearly working alongside you gets me all worked up. So, you know, that goes without saying.
I understand.
I think we covered everything. I mean, we got in the tweets. We got in the phone calls.
Yeah,
we covered milkshakes. We covered the NBA.
Smoothies.
Would you like to break down the Stanley Cup playoffs before we leave, or do you want to save that for tomorrow?
Oh, Rangers down 2-1. I'm sure Ranger fans aren't happy about
that. No, not at all.
We could do Pacquiao Mayweather if you want.
Well, we could certainly break that down. The art of boxing.
Rotator cuff.
Dancing around the ring, more effective than being non-aggressive.
You know what's funny? I was thinking about this today. I think the next guy that fights Mayweather should never go in and try to punch him and make Mayweather be the aggressor. And if you fight to a draw, like the first 11 rounds, and it's 10-10 because nobody throws any punches, you just use all your energy in the one round, you throw a million punches in the final round, and you win by decision by a point.
Intriguing strategy.
That's my Mayweather, Mayweather strategy.
Well, yeah, you have to draw him in somehow, though. It's been tough. It's been very tough.
No, you sit there, and you don't throw a punch for 11 rounds. You make Mayweather come to you.
Well, I mean, you might as well grab a snack and sit on the stool.
I wouldn't even
get up. Why even get up?
Can I have a hot dog in one hand?
There you go.
Gary, can just stand there?
Absolutely.
That works for me.
That sounds like a good game plan.
He has a selfie camera, take selfies in while he's fighting Mayweather.
See, a backup profession now is a fallback. You could be a boxing manager.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work out too well.
This is a new development that we're
I would love to get you into boxing. I think that'd be fun.
I think I'll stay.
I would love
that.
To see somebody just beat the you-know-what out of you in the ring. I think that'd be
great.
Well,
of course. Well, you don't need to get me in the boxing ring to do that. We could have an old-school Brooklyn street fighting as well.
I'm down for that.
Well, we'll save your out-of-the-box ideas for tomorrow. How about that?
All right, we'll do that. Everybody, thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
One of the end zone punt. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.